Manoj.
Hey Ashwini, how are you?
I'm very good, Manoj. How are you doing today?
Excellent. Friday evening.
Absolutely, absolutely. The whole weekend mode.
For me, even every day seems like a weekend mode, because but then Friday evening has its own charm. Children are back from school, they have a holiday next day, so they are also relaxed, so that way.
True, true, true. And just for all our listeners who are tuning in or who will listen to this conversation later, Manoj, as we know, is a best-selling author, and he's somebody who's super passionate about managing the finances better. And he's given multiple talks around this topic. He's done multiple open talks. If you have not listened to the ones we've discussed before, please do. Please click on his profile, go and listen to some of the open talks. We've discussed about wealth management principles. We've discussed about the importance of being financially free. So please do check it out. And Manoj, I think one of the things which makes me personally envious is, like you said, every day is a holiday for you, or every day is stress-free for you, because you are somebody who's achieved that financial freedom. You are doing something now. What you're doing is doing for pleasure and not for, just building or managing your finances. So I think that's something which
True.
I'm really envious, and I would want to learn from you through these open talks that we are having. And absolutely fantastic, and happy to have you here today.
Yes, Shuni, same here. I think it's a mutual pleasure always.
Thank you. So for all the listeners, today we are going to talk about today. So we've already covered few things around financial freedom. We've covered about the principles, but something important is when you start making those plans, or when you start preparing for your financial freedom, there are certain mistakes which anybody who's not had a mentor till now will make those mistakes. And today, Manoj wants to shed light on some of these mistakes which can be very easily avoided if you are aware, if you have a mentor, if you have understood these principles well. There could be these very simple mistakes that we should be avoiding. So, Manoj, over to you.
Okay, thank you, Ashwini. I think before we go on to the mistakes, typical mistakes people do and how we can avoid them, just a quick glimpse on what we are talking about when we say financial freedom. Although we discussed it in the earlier talks, but I think it's important to understand why at all we need to create a financial freedom plan. Why can't I just, keep earning and accumulating money and probably reach somewhere, a stage where I can quit my job or business or whatever. I always relate it to real life common scenarios, and it's like I start from my home in my car. It's like you start a job or a business and you start earning money, and you drive at a certain speed. You drive your car at a certain speed, so you're earning money at a certain rate. And what happens if you do not know where you are headed? You're driving your car at a certain speed, you don't know where you want to go. So it's a very futile exercise if you do that. And similarly, when you're earning money and earning at a certain speed, you do not know how much you need to earn. Where do you need to go? Finally, where do you need to reach? Okay, so it's this lack of goal which can really frustrate you in life. So it's very important for us to understand, while I'm earning it, how much money is enough for me for this life to be, to go through this life and take care of my responsibilities and take care of everything else smoothly. How much money do I need? 1 crore, 2 crores, 10 crores? It's different for everyone, but then how much is it for me? So that's very important to know. And for that, this financial freedom plan is very important. Otherwise, you are just you're moving without a goal. So
Absolutely.
yeah, so that's the first thing. So we got to make a plan first. Now, when we say we got to make a plan, there are of course various financial parameters that come into play. And total, when we create plan for our readers, total, there are 7 steps involved in creating a wholesome financial freedom plan for your entire life. And while the steps and the process is common, the plan, obviously the numbers are different for every person, and the investments required are different for every person, for every family, because everyone has their own lifestyle, their own future needs for money, their own way of living life. So everything is going to be different in terms of numbers, but the process is same. So I'm going to explain the process in various steps. And while I'm explaining those steps, I will try and point out certain mistakes most commonly people do in each of those steps while planning for their freedom. And this is based on whatever interactions I have with my readers. I mean, I interact with at least 2 to 3 readers one-on-one every day. So you can imagine over the last 5 years, thousands and thousands of readers I have interacted,
True.
whatever common mistakes they did. So we're going to start with step number one of financial freedom planning, which is understanding our cash flow. So cash flow, you know, it sounds very simple, and it's like whatever you're earning is your income and whatever you're spending is your expense, right? And the difference of the two is basically what you save, okay? And then that's potentially what you can invest. It's very simple, okay? But now the challenge comes as we dig deeper. You know, when we say expense, so what are the expenses we are talking about? So by definition, you know, expense is something which you burn or spend in lieu of a service or a product. So we have to be very careful, and that we don't count certain things which usually people count as expenses. For example, there are so many people whom I interact with who say, okay, I am giving an EMI of my home loan, and so that gets deducted from whatever money I earn. So ultimately, that's an expense. What is your view, Ashwini? Do you think the EMI is going to be an expense?
That's a tricky one. So EMI, in my opinion, if the EMI is probably going towards building an asset, like maybe you've bought some jewelry or maybe you've bought a house, maybe then it may not be calculated as an expense. Rather, if the EMI is going into a phone that you bought or a car that you bought, which is a depreciating asset in itself, maybe then it's an expense. I'm not sure if I answered it properly.
No, you're right. So I basically we're interacting as I would usually interact with any reader. So now remember that expenses are something which are going to be the money which you burn and which you're going to do year after year or month after month or at a regular frequency, at some regular frequency throughout your life. Okay. So as you said, EMIs for your home loan. Now that's not going to run throughout your life. That's point number one. Okay. Second, expenses are usually inflated because of inflation. You know, they're adjusted in terms of every year you're going to have a 6%, 10% rise in your expenses, but EMIs stay the same. So usually we do not count EMIs as expenses. We take them as liabilities when we go to the next step. So currently in step one, where we are looking at our income and expenses, EMIs are usually not counted as an expense. Okay, so that's the first mistake people do.
So one of the things, one of the confusions which I had, Manoj, was that if EMI is not part of cash flows, are there other things which we should not make part of our expenses or maybe income also for that matter? You know, let's say if I get a bonus or if I get a gift from somebody, cash gift from a relative, now these should be part of my cash flows or not? So are there these the basic list of exclusions which I should keep in mind whenever I'm preparing cash flows?
So good point. So I think in expenses when we were talking, EMIs as we just talked about, similarly, a lot of people get confused between an expense and an investment. So people come and say, okay, if I am investing 5,000 rupees a month in a particular mutual fund, so is that not an expense for me? Because that gets deducted from my whatever savings, right? But again, we must remember that whatever you're investing in a mutual fund or any other investment, that is the money which is going to grow, which is likely to grow at least, And it's not burnt out to, you know, in exchange of any service or in exchange of any product. So it's not an expense. So we got talked about EMIs, we're talking about investments, which are not your expenses. Another mistake which commonly people do is they consider income tax deduction, because some of the tax gets deducted suddenly during the end of the year, or they have to file an ITR and in that they have to pay some tax on that. So they consider that income tax as an expense. Remember, income tax is not an expense, it's just a reduction of your income. It is a very basic difference we must understand. It's so important. While you may feel that if 20,000 rupees tax has been deducted, how does it matter if I count it as an expense or I reduce the income? Because ultimately the savings remain the same. But it matters when you're planning for financial freedom, because expenses is something which your financial freedom has to take care of for the rest of your life. Okay. And you have to be very, very careful about what you're putting in expenses. So if you are earning 1 lakh rupees and if you're paying 1,000 rupees income tax in a certain month, this 20,000 is an expense, because we don't that and take it to the last day of your life. You don't want to do that. Okay. So these are certain expense related issues, and you talked about income. Many salaried people usually consider whatever net income is coming to you know, to their bank account as the only income they have. There is a element of retirals deduction that happens, which is either provident fund or superannuation, whatever, you know, which we usually kind of ignore when counting our income. Now remember that that is also your income. It's just that it's getting deducted and put in a separate account, which is a provident fund account. Okay. But you're earning it. You're earning it every month. And not only you are earning it every month, a part of it is also contributed by your employer. So even that is your income. And it's just getting put in a separate account, just like a bank account, it's getting put in a provident fund account. Okay, so these are certain mistakes which usually we do when counting our cash flow.
All right. And Manoj, at what frequency would you say we should do this exercise? You know, should we do it monthly as soon as the expenses for the month are over or the beginning of the month? Or you would say let's plan it in advance for the year or do it at the end of the year? You know, what should be the frequency of doing this cash flow analysis?
So, you know, as far as your income expense tracking is concerned, if you ask me, it's a very important question. When the basic problem that is there is not all expenses happen in 1 month or 2 months. You
True,
know, there are
absolutely true,
many
yeah.
expenses whose frequency could be quarterly, could be semi-annual, annuals, once in 2 years sometimes. Like, for example, if somebody goes for travel and vacations once in 2 years. So you're going to miss out on certain expenses if you are going to, you know, wait for a year to, you know, do this analysis. If somebody who is focused on financial freedom has to go and track the expenses at least once a week, otherwise you're going to miss out.
Wow.
In fact, I mean, I do it every day, but it takes just 2 minutes. It takes 2 minutes. You know, these are very basic things. I'm earning money and I'm, you know, I don't, I lose control if I'm not doing it every week at least. But every day I do it. I may not recommend it for everyone to do it every day because of your own jobs and businesses and all. But, you know, the more deep you go in terms of your tracking, the more you reduce your expenses. And it's been scientifically proven that somebody who tracks expenses every week has the potential to reduce expenses by as much as 15%, just because you're tracking it. And you know, it starts to burn your mind when you start tracking it. It's all a mind game ultimately. So I think it's very, very important that you track it every week. It doesn't take more than 5 6 minutes to do that. If you're doing it every day, it takes 2 minutes. Before I go to bed, I just put on, okay, tuck, 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 these are the 3 things I did spend the money on today, finished.
Wow. Wow.
But it gives you such an immense control. And you remember, a 5% or a 2% reduction in your expense can be massive in terms of when you talk about financial freedom. And extrapolating that money over the rest of your life with inflation adjustment, with compounding and everything, because inflation plays like compounding. So it can be a massive amount. So I think these are the small things, the discipline that's needed to really push for your financial freedom.
Absolutely, no. I think one of the key points that you mentioned here is the discipline. These things don't take a lot of your time. Doing it, like you said, just before you go to sleep, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, just to jot down your major expenses of the day does not take much. That's absolutely true.
So in fact, actually the entire financial freedom journey is not at all complex, let me tell you. It's one of the simplest things you would do in your life compared to what you do in your jobs and businesses. But the challenge, it demands certain level of discipline and commitment and patience. Now, these are the things which we unfortunately lack in today's generation, probably. And these are the things which are going to take you to freedom. Not how much you earn, because whatever you earn, you can just throw it away the same month. It's the discipline, it's the commitment, it's your patience which is going to take you through this journey.
True, true, true. Absolutely true. And you're absolutely right. There are so many things with just a little discipline, be it your health, be it your finances, be it your be it you building a habit, writing, doesn't really take so much time. It's just about consistency of doing these things. Absolutely.
Yeah, true.
So Manoj,
Right.
another question. Sorry.
No, go ahead, go ahead.
A very small question this time. So now a person, and this is specific to you. So where do you do this? What is it? A notepad? Is it a book? Is it a laptop? Is it a calendar? Is it a Excel sheet? What do you say would be a good reckoner for just doing this? A journal?
Well, different people have, get motivated by different tools.
True.
It's all about keeping yourself motivated in this, because this does become boring for people who are not driven by a strong reason. So, I would not recommend any particular thing. I can share with you what I do, but I will not say that this is a recommended approach for everyone.
Absolutely.
So see, I do it because we have a website where we do all these steps, whatever I am talking about and whatever I'm going to talk about. So where people come and do, I mean, there are around 300 odd people whom I am, coaching one-on-one today, who are on the journey towards financial freedom. Every one of them, almost every one of them, they come and do their entire daily expense tracking on the website. Okay, and some do it daily, some do it weekly, some even do it monthly. But whatever I have seen, people who are doing it daily and doing it at a level of 5 rupees, 10 rupees, they are the people who are really striving in this journey, really moving ahead very fast.
Wow.
So, but you can use Excel, you can use Notepad, you can use anything that there's so many apps nowadays. You can use any of the apps. But why I recommend the website is because, ultimately it's not a isolated thing to just track your income and expenses. In a financial freedom plan, everything gets integrated and analyzed later on. So
True.
this whatever money you save ultimately will define your speed towards financial freedom. Okay, it's like
Understood.
I gave you an example of moving in a car from my house to a particular destination. So at what speed I'm going to go is going to decide how quickly I reach the destination. So the more I save, the more, I mean, the chances are that I will reach freedom quite early. And that's why this entire thing defines my speed in my financial freedom plan. This entire first step of your cash flow is an element which defines the speed at which you're moving towards the journey. And so it's an integral part of your entire plan.
Right. Right, absolutely. So, and
Okay.
Manoj, the website that you mentioned is the one which is there in your profile.
Same website. And anybody can register, anybody can log in. It's all free. Anybody can start using all the tools available. They are free, of course. There is absolutely no charges. Only people who want to get enrolled in a specific program called as an elite program, which I run, where I personally mentor people towards financial freedom. Only there's a separate application and separate process. But otherwise, anybody is free to use any tool on the website.
Perfect, perfect. Thank you so much, Manoj, for sharing this information. Please let's go ahead. Let's move to the second point.
Okay, so I think that was the first step towards planning for your financial freedom, which was understanding your cash flow. The second important step is understanding your net worth today. So where are you today? So it's like, again, the same example of driving in a car. So cash flow defined at what speed you're driving it. Okay, so that influences your time in which you finish off your journey. But the second step, understanding your net worth, current net worth defines where are you today. Okay, so if I have to go from Delhi to Mumbai via car, then where am I today? Am I today somewhere near Mumbai? Am I just outside Delhi? Am I somewhere in between, let's say in Vadodara? Where am I? So my current net worth will tell me where am I standing today. Okay. And how do you find out your net worth? Just like in a cash flow, you have income and expenses, two sections. In net worth, you have two sections, assets and liabilities. So there are certain assets that you own, there are certain liabilities that you owe. Okay. And by definition, assets, the definitions are very important because, that helps you classify what is an asset and what is not. That's another area where a lot of people get confused. So asset, by definition is something which is expected to increase in value and come back to you. So if I put the money in my fixed deposits, mutual funds, EPF, PPF, bonds, shares, whether it increases or not is a different thing, but it is at least expected to increase. Okay. And liability is something which, I mean, something which you owe, which is not your money, which you owe to someone, which you have to pay. And the difference of these two, assets minus liabilities, is basically your net worth today. So again, there are a lot of mistakes people do when I say in terms of identifying assets. First thing, people get confused whether the house where they stay is that an asset or not. So what's
Right,
your view?
absolutely. The house that I'm staying in, although a property would be an asset, but I'm staying in it, it should still be an asset, Manoj, I would say.
Okay, so by definition, assets something which are expected to increase in value and the money comes back to you. Now, unfortunately, in the case of your house where you're staying, you cannot liquidate that to get that money back and use that money for either funding your expenses or something else. Okay, so since you
Right, right,
cannot
right.
liquidate it, it's not possible to liquidate in your lifetime. We do not usually count it as an asset. Although again, there are various strategies with which we can counter it, but that's like reverse mortgage and all, but that's a different story. But a house where you're staying is not your asset because you cannot get the money back. You cannot liquidate it and use that money. Okay.
True, true, true.
But the house which you have for, let's say, as a second house or something which you build as an investment, which is giving you some rent or whatever, that's definitely an asset because you're earning out of it either as a rent or it is just appreciating in value and you can probably liquidate after whatever time, whenever you need it. So that's definitely an asset.
So Manoj, that leads me to a question. So would something which is an asset, or would something like where there's a lock-in? So for example, let's say I have invested in tax saving fixed deposit, which has a 5 year lock-in,
Correct.
or a mutual fund where there's a lock-in. So
Correct.
for those 4 or 5 years, since that asset is not accessible to me, would I not count that as an asset during those 4 or 5 years? Or I can
No,
still
no.
count that as an asset?
It's still your asset because even after 5 years, it's going to come back to you with an increased value. The question which you're asking typically is not about whether it's an asset or liability. The question should be whether it's a liquid asset or not, or what's the liquidity of an asset. Okay, so
Okay.
currently it has a lock-in, so your liquidity becomes low for your overall portfolio. Let's say you have 10 lakhs of your overall portfolio, and out of which, let's say 1 lakh is in such kind of fixed deposit, which is, let's say, 5 year lock-in. So your entire portfolio is not liquid right now. So liquidity is one parameter which we measure, which is not a part of step two. We'll come to it in step number five. Okay.
Okay.
Yes, your portfolio liquidity is very important. And if you have, as I said, as an example, 1 lakh of FDs in a 10 lakh of portfolio, so your portfolio is currently 90% liquid, assuming everything else is liquid.
Got it,
Okay.
yeah.
This becomes a very, very important parameter if you have to take care of our, future expenses. So if I have expenses coming up, let's say my child's college admission is coming up in 2 years, and if I lock in my amount in a fixed deposit for 5 years, then it's a foolish thing to do, right? So while a fixed deposit with a lock-in will save me taxes, but I'm landing in a situation which is not a very favorable situation as far as investing is concerned. So that's why not all investments are good for everyone. So a fixed deposit with a lock-in may be good for you if you don't have any major expense coming up in next 5 years, but it may not be good for me because I have some major expense coming up in 2 years and I need to use it. So that's why, all these things get integrated into one plan, and that's why all these inputs are very, very important to be integrated together.
True, true, true. In fact, Manoj, while you were explaining this whole concept, it just took me back to my MBA days where, we pored over so many books. We spent so many hours understanding this for a company, understanding this for a business. And
True.
whereas think about it, more than that, your personal finances, and rather than that,
True.
understanding your personal finances is so much more important
Very
because
true.
And there's absolutely no formal education. We've been to B schools, be it separate courses. There'll be no formal education.
True.
At that age, if people were taught something about that, how do you manage your own personal finances, liabilities, understanding that your property is not this. I think these are concepts which we should learn very early on. And
True.
so I was just comparing that this exactly applies to businesses, but it was never, neither was taught, neither we had the intelligence to port it back to our personal finances.
And it's
So
not
fantastic.
much different between a business and a personal finance. It's most of the concepts are very similar. It's just that we have never applied it to our personal finance, as you said. And once you start applying it, it's so interesting. And you don't really need to teach a lot to anyone. Once you apply it in your personal finance, it's very easy to understand businesses also.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, and I think one of the other common mistakes people do in identifying assets other than the house part is the assets which are, and typically in India this happens, where the assets which you want to leave for your next generation. What do we do with them? Do we count them as assets or not? For example, a lot of families I see, they want to, keep some gold for their children's marriage. Or they want to leave a house for their children after they're not there, or leave some other cash amount or some bank FD or something for their next generation. So what do you
Right.
think, looking at, I mean, with whatever you have understood till now, do you think that would be counted as your asset if, let's say, I have a gold deposit of 4 lakh rupees, but I want to leave it for my children? So would I count it as an asset?
So Manoj, if again going by something that you mentioned earlier, if I don't personally have access to this fund or I cannot liquidate it or I don't plan to liquidate it for my financial requirements, at least in my lifetime, then probably I should not consider it in my asset.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're right. So it's that
Fantastic.
simple. Once you've understood what asset is for you, then any example you should be able to clearly classify whether it's an asset or not. So if there is a gold or a fixed deposit or a real estate you want to leave for your next generation, then that's not your asset, that's the asset of your next generation.
Right.
That simple. I think the other mistakes people do is in terms of, typically in terms of life insurances they have. Many people consider life insurance as an asset. Some people do not consider it an asset. Of course, if it's a term insurance, it has no value in terms of asset, in terms of being liquefied. So
Right.
anyway, term insurances get ruled out in any case. But even the other insurances that you have, where you have some maturity value, they can be considered as your asset, but with corresponding liabilities, whatever premiums are pending. So you do, correspondingly consider the liability part also. Okay. And
Right, right,
in
right.
terms of, so this is for assets, some of the examples, the common mistakes people do, I mentioned. Then in terms of liabilities, I think we have to be very careful that we talked about EMIs when we're talking in step one. So EMIs definitely are your liabilities. Liabilities are typically those money which you have to pay to someone. It's not your money, just like bank EMIs, and you're paying it slowly. They are there for a fixed duration. They are not there for your entire life. So they could be there for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, maybe 30 years, but they're definitely not there for your entire life. And they're typically not inflation adjusted. They're fixed amounts. Okay. So EMIs is one. Life insurance premiums, this is another, because again,
Right.
that's for a fixed duration, no inflation adjustment. So you count it as a liability. So typically, a lot of people do that mistake of counting an insurance premium as an expense, but that's not an expense, that's a liability. Okay, so this is what usually people do. So if you have anything you think you're not sure about, you can ask Ashwini, I mean, at any stage.
Yeah. So Manoj, on the expenses side, does the same method of understanding expenses or liabilities apply? That if, for example, if there is a liability which I'm supposed to pay or which I'm supposed to end, I'm not able to collect for, think of an example, but is this general rule that if it is not going to be a liability in my lifespan or I am not obligated to pay it, but it might come to future generations, then should I not include it? I know this is sort of, this is
Yeah, no.
on the edge of morality as well, but do we consider it? Do we not consider
Yeah,
it?
no, it's a very practical situation. So what happens in an education loan typically is you take a loan for your child who wants to go for higher studies, and the process is that you would save taxes on your whatever income you're earning because you've taken an education loan. But the education loan is supposed to be paid back by your child whenever he or she starts earning money. So whatever the agreement says in terms of whatever the bank says, but
Right.
you're not supposed to pay back that money, right? So whatever EMIs are going to be there is not going to be your EMIs, unless of course your child defaults and is unable to pay, and then of course, I mean, that's a different story. But in a normal circumstance, these entire EMIs become your child's liability. So he or she is going to start his or her life, with a big liability, but for you it's not a liability unless you
Got it.
decide to pay. Okay, I'll pay 50%. So then 50% of it becomes your liability.
Right. And Manoj, we have a question from the audience. So Sumit is asking if you can, again, just maybe quickly elaborate on the differences between which ones to identify, or a similar rule of thumb to identify expenses versus liabilities.
So first rule is never count any particular item in both the places. Many people do it. So they will count EMI in their monthly expense also, and they will also count EMI as a liability. So don't do that. That's one big blunder people do. They will count at both places. So either an item can be an expense or it can be a liability. And what should it be? And it's very simple. Expense is something which you're going to execute for the most part of your life, and it will be inflation adjusted. The money will be burnt out in exchange of certain goods or services. Okay, definition you have to remember. This definition will help you classify things. Okay, liability is not lifetime, it is not inflation adjusted, and it is for a fixed span of time.
Understood. Understood. Okay. That's a very good rule of thumb, I think, which we can all simple rules of thumb that we can apply
Yeah,
and, be able
avoid
to traverse
mistakes.
them
Yeah,
easily.
so I think
Yeah.
before we end, I want to just highlight a few points. So this was step two, and I think subsequent steps we'll be talking in other talks in future. But before we end, I think very, very important to understand three points. First, in step number two, when we talked about assets, liabilities, essentially what we're trying to get is our net worth. Okay, so what is my financial net worth today, which is my assets minus my liabilities? Okay, so this net worth is very critical. A lot of people do this mistake of going by assets. Okay, how much assets do I have? I have 1 crore of assets, but that's meaningless if you have to pay 1 crore of liabilities, you have 1 crore of EMI. So ultimately, you have nothing with you. Okay, so and even in corporate, as you talked about, when we study companies for buying stocks or whatever, for otherwise also, it's very easy to elevate the amount or the number of assets. Easily take a asset on loan, but unless you study the net worth or the equity, as we call it there, of a company, you do not come to know the true worth of the company. Okay, so same way for assessing our own personal true worth, financial worth, we got to understand net worth. Okay, not talk on only in terms of assets. So in our financial freedom planning that we do, we only track net worth. We do not, I mean, we of course, net worth will be calculated based on tracking of assets and liabilities. But in terms of our goals, where do we need to reach? I need to reach, let's say, 2 crores of net worth. I'm not going to say I'm going to reach 3 crore of assets. I got to reach 2 crore of net worth or 3 crore, whatever amount. Okay. So net worth is important to track for financial freedom, not only assets. Okay. Second important point is net worth is always as on a particular timestamp or a particular date. So today my net worth is this. Tomorrow it may change depending on, let's say, I've made some more savings, I've invested. So it's on a particular date. While the cash flow, which was the first step we talked about, is for a particular period. Okay. So cash flow will be for a month, for a year, or whatever we want to talk about. Okay. And third and the last point is, again, relating it back to the example of moving in a car. Net worth defines where you are standing today. So higher your net worth today, the closer you are to your goal and the faster you can reach financial freedom. While your cash flow will define your speed. So the higher the cash flow, the higher is the speed, faster you can
Faster
reach.
we're moving, yeah.
So I think these are some basic things which we should keep in mind. So we've talked about two steps. And of course, we'll be continuing this talk when you talk about further steps.
All right. Manoj, this was fantastic. And even after being a majors in finance, there were so many things that were new to me, so many rules of thumb which everybody can learn from and easily apply in managing their finances better. So thanks again so much for sharing these very simple, very quick to use, very easy to understand. Just need to build the discipline to use these rules, use these thumb rules. And I'm sure that, as we go along this journey together, you're making managing finances much easier subject for all of
Oh, it
us.
actually is very easy, I mean, we have just made it complex. It's so, I'm again telling you this, financial freedom is very simple to achieve, but as I said, it needs discipline, commitment, patience. If you have these three things, nobody can stop you. Anyone, any person, nobody can stop them from reaching financial freedom.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. So thank you so much, Manoj.
Great,
And we
Ashwini. What?
look. Sure, please.
Okay then, take care.
Take care, Manoj. Thank you. Bye.